said he was he'd spoken to him previously, but it's good that they have.
Okay. Good evening. My name's Christian Street and I'm the Acting Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome you all this evening to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 3rd of August 2026, and then a special welcome to those who are joining us in the public gallery this evening. Could you please make sure that your mobile phones are turned to silent? It's 5:31pm and I now officially declare this meeting open. Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, and under those regulations I'm required to advise you that an audio or audio-visual recording is being made of the meeting. All persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I will now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and I acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening are myself, Acting Mayor, Councillor Christian Street, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Richardson. From our staff, we have Chief Executive Officer Mr Dave Stewart, Director People and Finance Mr David Spinks, Director Governance, Recreation and Property Services Mr Daniel Smee, Director Engineering Services Mr Craig Mackey, Director Environment Development and Community Services Mrs Delise Shakuti, our Lead Strategic Planner Mr Adrienne Stander, Communications Lead Ms Sam Adams and our Executive Assistant Mrs Amanda Morton. I have no apologies. Can I please have a mover that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 13 held on 20 July 2026 be confirmed as a true record? Moved Councillor Fox and seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour please say aye. To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Workshops held since last council meeting. On the 27th of July, we had a workshop on the Regional Sports and Recreation Plan and specific area plans. Moving on to page 2, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No. Moving to transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. Moving on to item 8, questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public have a question without notice?
G'day, my name's Will Perry from Howden. So my question is, there have been a number of incidents centred around the Kingston bus interchange outside the Combank building. I've been advised that CCTV was included in the original project scope for the shelter at the interchange outside Combank. Provisions, including conduit, was installed, but cameras didn't make the cut to reduce costs mid-construction. Can Council confirm whether CCTV was in fact part of the original design? At what point was it removed and who made that decision? And what was the cost saving that would justify removing it?
We'll take that question on notice, Mr Perry.
Thanks. Cheers.
Are there any further questions without notice? No. If there are no further questions without notice, I'll move on to questions on notice from the public. There are three questions on notice from the public. The first in relation to Browns River from Mrs Jo Westwood, the second in relation to Gallagher's Road from Ms Kim Phillips, and a third question on TPC hearings from Ms Alison Rogers. Moving to item 10, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova, I think I saw first.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My first question is about roadkill prevention. Back in 2023, maybe 2022, I moved a motion about a roadkill mitigation strategy. Among the answers to that was that the council was intending on producing a natural areas and biodiversity strategy for which a wildlife roadkill mitigation would be a constituent part. So my question is, what is the expected due date for the Natural Areas Biodiversity Strategy, and specifically what provisions will that strategy include to reduce wildlife vehicle collisions in Kingra?
I think we're going to take that question on notice, Councillor Cordova, so that we can respond appropriately given the detail that's been requested.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Questions? A second question, if I may. This one's about the Kingra Nest Boxes program. I'm just wondering if the Kingra Nest Boxes program is adequately provisioned by the state government, or if it's an initiative wholly resourced by council. And I'm specifically interested in the swift parrot, and if there's what work's been being done around that. Ms. Shakuti.
Thank you. I'm actually going to take that on notice. We obviously do have nest boxes around the municipality, but I couldn't answer with a high level of confidence whether that's primarily Kingra Council or partnership with the state government.
Councillor Cordova. Thank you, Acting Mayor. A third one, this one's about feral deer management, and it's great to see that there was a workshop, feral deer management workshop briefing with NRE. My question is, council sufficiently provisioned by the state government for running those feral deer management programs, particularly around data gathering and eradication, or would the council benefit would the council welcome more state government funding and resource sharing?
I've never known us to not welcome more state government funding, Councillor Cordova, but Ms. Shakuti.
Thank you. I was going to answer the same, that if there was more funding available for much of what we do, that would be excellent. I don't think we've really firmed up exactly how Kingra will be contributing to it in terms of specific actions required for monitoring and data collection, so it's hard to answer that at this point in time. Again, it's probably better we take that on notice so that I can seek some more information from staff.
Thank you. And so that's all my questions, but I just wanted, for the record, the first question was around roadkill, just to have that minuted. Thanks.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Mine is regarding a question from petitioners who have sent in a petition that we are going to discuss on as agenda item 14.4. The question, though, was why does the agenda say that there's been no petitions received, but we are discussing their petition? Is there an issue about their petition that they should be aware of?
The issue is that the petition doesn't conform with the formality requirements in the Local Government Act. The solution to that was noting the strong community interest in the matter and the fact that a petition was presented. The determination was made that council should consider it regardless of the fact that those formality requirements were not met. So that's why it's not in the section of the agenda with respect to petitions. However, it is in the agenda as a separate officer's report to council with the petition objectives stated at item 14.4.
Fantastic. I think that's very gracious of the council to do that. Have we educated the petitioners to help them in the future where they miss the mark? Because they seem to be unaware that they missed the mark on the formality part.
Mr. Stewart?
Thanks for the question. I'm unaware whether we've directly gone back to the petitioners on that in this instance. However, I'll note that given we are considering it anyway as if it was a formally and compliant petition, I think it shows the intent behind where we're trying to respond to community concerns. In addition, I would note that any petitioners can utilise a service on Council's website to be able to publicise their petitions, and that way we can make sure for them that their petition complies with the requirements of the Act.
Thank you. That's all from me.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions from me sent through via a community member. Is Council aware of that Australian Local Government Association is calling for a new $400 million per year climate adaptation fund to be distributed across all councils to provide local place-based solutions to Australia's changing climate? And do we know if this at all will be discussed at the upcoming Local Government Association Tasmania conference?
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. So I'm aware that there was discussion about that topic at the recent ALGA National General Assembly conference. I haven't seen any publication from ALGA at this stage around that that call to action, around that advocacy for funding. I will keep an eye out and I will review to see whether we have received anything on that. In regard to the upcoming Local Government Association of Tasmania conference, I don't believe it is on the conference agenda for that conference. However, there could well be conversation that happens around that conference, but that the organisation of that conference is within the auspices of Local Government Association of Tasmania, not Kingborough Council.
Thank
you. Councillor Midgley.
Question. The community member would like to know, can ratepayers be made aware of what council is actually budgeting on the increased need to repair and or replace infrastructure and also the proposed costs of climate adaptation in the next 5 years?
Mr. Stewart.
Is that available on the website anywhere, or where would community members find such information? I know we have a climate report card, but I'm not sure if it has that detail.
We might need to take the substance of that question on notice. I would note, however, that Kingborough Council's capital budget for the year is published as part of the budget papers on an annual basis, so the capital budget is available for anyone to review. But in terms of the longer term, we're doing a lot of work in this space around our strategic asset management plan at the moment, which will give us a longer term view of what our capital program looks like into outer years. So that's something that we're firming up at the moment. But I'll take the question on notice.
Are there any further questions without notice from councillors?
No. We move on to page 4 and item 11, questions on notice from councillors. And at the time the agenda was considered, there were no questions on notice from councillors. At item 12, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. At item 13, at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. With that, the open session adjourns at 5:43pm and the planning authority commences at 5:43pm. And we move to item 14.1, review of the Bonnet Hill and Bruny Island specific area plans. Do I have a Councillor Bain?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'd actually like to move to discuss.
There's a motion to move to discuss. Is there a seconder for that motion? Seconder in Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. It's carried unanimously. Having moved to discuss this item, I want to briefly discuss the manner in which we deal with the report and the recommended motion. Over the space of the last 48 hours particularly, I've had a number of conversations with council colleagues that indicate to me that the recommended motion is likely to fail. Coming to that realisation and considering much of the feedback that we have had from the community also, I anticipated that there was another pathway forward in relation to this matter that would receive the Pitt and Sherry report and provide it to the Planning Commission in accordance with the direction that they made to Council. But would otherwise withdraw support for the original specific area plans and the revised specific area plans. Again, following conversations with colleagues, I've formed the view as chair of this meeting that that motion is more likely to succeed than the recommended motion. And that is why when we move out of discussion, I'll be seeking a mover of that alternate motion that I drafted with some assistance from staff. The reason I'm doing that is because I don't think it's in anyone's interest to waste councillors' time
or the community's time or our professional staff's time debating a motion that is unlikely to pass and will simply require the moving of an alternate motion in any event. Now, having said all of that, I do need to pass to the CEO for some further qualified advice in relation to the Pitt and Sherry report.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. So I just wanted to bring to both councillors and the community's attention that a couple of typo or labelling issues have been picked up within the Pitt and Sherry report. We have received a replacement report, and so I seek to highlight those with you today so that you're aware of the changes that have happened to the previously published information. So I refer to page 62 of the agenda, which is labelled page 47 of the Pitt and Sherry report. Mrs. Morton has on the screen what I'm referring to. So I'm referring to the labelling around section 32.4 of LUPA around the justification for the SPPs. That was missing a B, so it refers to section 34. 32.4B, not section 32.4 generally. So you can see on the screen the correction on the left-hand side where it includes the B as opposed to the right-hand side, which is just a dash there. From there, I advance to the following page, page 48 of the Pitt and Sherry report, or page 63 of the council agenda, where it has section 32.4A. That page remains the same with the labelling of the 32.4A. It refers to the legislation there. From there, I advance to the next page, which is page 49 of the Pitt and Sherry report, or page 64 of the council agenda. Section 32.4B is labelled. The correct labelling of that is an extension of section 32.4A. So again on the following clause where it says section 32.4C, that has been corrected to say also section 32.4A. So the reason for that is there's three tests within section 32.4A, and they've been broken up into their component parts with how it's been addressed. So the only substance of the change is the labelling of those four legislative tests.
Okay. Thank you, CEO. Before I see whether there's any further discussion or ask for a mover to move out of discussion, just some further information in relation to the alternate motions that I drafted and provided to my colleagues for consideration and potential moving this evening. They are three motions. The first motion is a motion that receives the Pitt and Sherry report and endorses the provision of the report to the Planning Commission so that the Planning Authority has complied with the Commission's directions and requirements. And that will be the report as amended, the one that's just been with the amendments that the CEO has just indicated. The second motion is in relation to the Blackmans Bay Bluff SAP and endorsing the removal of the Blackmans Bay Bluff component of the specific area plan from the draft local provision schedule, which was in line with the advice that we received in the Pitt and Sherry report. The third motion is in relation to the Bruny Island and remaining Bonnet Hill component of the Bonnet Hill and Blackmans Bay SAP, which notes the revised plans that the revised plans differ substantially from the originally exhibited SAP and that we determine not to endorse those revised plans as the position of the Planning Authority at this time and determine on the basis of the advice that we've received in the Pitt and Sherry report that support should also be withdrawn for the original Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill specific area plans. there's an acceptance that there is or may be an environmental need for a SAP on Bruny Island, but that significantly more consultation is required with the community about that matter before such a specific area plan should proceed, and that that should occur after the implementation of the local provision schedule. So that's an outline of the three component motions that I've suggested for moving. Is there any further discussion, or do I have a mover to move out of discussion and... Yes, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Thank you for our CEO for picking up the errors. I believe that was from probably Table 4 in the Pitt and Sherry report. Yeah. So the changes, the amendments that Pitt and Sherry have sent to us, or the corrections, in no way stops us with going ahead with this motion, because we haven't been able to digest it all. It's all happened live.
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the question. So the changes are around the labelling. There is no change to the content or the recommendations or the analysis within the report. So I'm comfortable noting that within the revised motion that the Mayor has referred to, that we note the amended version of that, then I see no reason not to proceed on that basis.
Councillor Antoli.
And so therefore we are able to now send to the TPC the amended version of the Pitt and Sherry report. Is that correct, with whatever it is we vote on tonight?
Mr. Stewart.
Subject to the vote around the table agreeing to do so, yes, we can.
Is there any further contribution on discussion? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Yeah, just a question sent through in regards to the option of a deferral of it all. Wondering if there is a risk in deferring a decision about the SAPs until the further consultation is done.
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. So the... I think there is some risk in deferring the receipt of this report and the debate around the SAPs themselves. A deferral is fundamentally a non-decision from council. I think it would be clearer for the council to make a decision one way or the other tonight, and then from that point be able to proceed forward with the hearings from a clear direction from the Planning Authority to the Planning Commission about this organisation's views, and that will be easier for the Commission to then use that as the basis for further conversations. I think it has been noted, however, the validity of further conversation with the community around these specific area plans.
Anything further on discussion? If there's nothing further... Sorry, Councillor Cordova.
Yeah, so thank you, Acting Mayor. I was particularly interested in the idea of having the Kingborough Community Fund, the Kingborough Community Forum hold a special meeting at which members of the public could submit their feedback around the SAPs, and have the community forum sit around this table and have the councillors sit up the back and listen, and then bring this back for councillors to vote on. But from what I'm hearing based on this discussion, there would be statutory risk to us for pushing this out to the end of the year to a new council, and or is it just a choice? My question is there a legal imperative that says we have to deal with this tonight rather than letting the community have a voice about it and then go back? Is it a legal thing, or is it just a choice?
Mr. Stewart.
Thanks for the question. So there's no legal imperative for this to be addressed tonight. However, I would note that we have directions from the Tasmanian Planning Commission to address the outstanding directions that relate to specific area plans, and that's something that we're seeking to do tonight. I also note the drawn-out process that is underway, and the fact that there are people seeking certainty through this, and adding additional delay will have an impact on them. The other point I will make is around the Kingborough Community Forum has a terms of reference and a certain group of community organisations that attend that. I think the challenge with that recommendation that you've provided, Councillor Cordova, is that it is a certain subset of the community, and it doesn't necessarily have full representation of the areas that are addressed by the specific area plans that we're talking about, and it has representation from outside of that. So it's not necessarily appropriate mechanism in this instance, in my opinion, to fully debate the merits of that. I think if there was further engagement to occur, we would be looking to be more targeted with that around who was around the table.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you for that answer. So through you, Acting Mayor, I'm agnostic about the mechanism. I think there should be a special community meeting of one form or another, and I don't really mind exactly what it looks like or who's invited. I think everybody should be invited and everybody should have the opportunity to have their say before council debates on this again. Therefore, I'd like to move the procedural motion to defer, and that way we can have a vote on it. So I move that we defer.
I've got a motion that we defer. Actually, we're not there. I would need you to move out of discussion first. So I don't accept the procedural motion. Is there any further discussion on this matter, or do I have a mover that we move out of discussion? Councillor Fox?
I find this whole situation a little bit confusing, and I am concerned that if we don't agree to the special area plan for Bruny Island, that we're going to miss an opportunity, and that SAP is going to be moved out beyond the current elected council, that it's going to be almost impossible to backtrack and do all the work in a timely manner before the planning scheme itself is adopted without the protection that we are keen to see on Bruny Island, or some of us are, and the environmental, not only the environmental bird strike issue and the swift parrots, but also the extensive subdivision that could occur, building that could occur on areas that have no sewerage and hardly any water, and the density and the intensity of development in that area, how that is going to erode any future saps that we might want to put in, and the damage may well have been done already. So I'd like to hear from our planning staff whether that is in fact the case, or whether the saps in their current form can still go ahead in a modified form and be effective in a reasonable time.
Ms. Chikuti.
Thank you. I suppose as staff, we've provided a lot of detailed information to councillors about the proposed revised SAPs, the drafts of those. They, as they are drafted at the moment, it is to address key risks on the island that relate to infrastructure, vegetation, etc. However, it really, I believe now, is a matter for councillors as the planning authority to make that determination. So I don't think there's probably much more we can add at this stage that will assist. So, yeah, that's unfortunately probably where we're at in terms of there's not a lot more that we can add to the information that's already been provided in the reports on the agenda.
Councillor Fox.
I guess I appreciate that. There has been a lot of consultation, but obviously it's ongoing, and it's all about the timing. I'm just more concerned about the timing than the work that's already been done.
Is there a question in there, Councillor Fox? Sorry, I'm just... Which element? Are you seeking a response to an element of that statement?
It's a logistics situation, and I'm concerned about the logistics of not looking harder at supporting the Bruny Island SAP and what the logistics of that situation will be in terms of the planning scheme being adopted. It's not an unreasonable question, is it?
Is your question what's the relevant timing concerns with agreeing to or not agreeing to any motion in favour or against the amended specific area plans this evening?
Yes.
Ms. Shakuti?
So sorry, just to clarify, is your question relating to if it doesn't proceed, then what would be the likely timing potentially of a revised SAP at a point after the LPS is finalised? Okay. So I suppose we can't really answer that definitively. So the LPS process, if the SAPs were to be withdrawn, would need to be finalised. We're expecting that to be end of the year into next year. The work that would be then required to look at a revised SAP, I imagine, would be quite substantial in terms of making sure the consultation, etc., was robust. We've seen that there's obviously a lot of interest and concern, and there will be many voices that would want to contribute. And then going through the actual process of amending the LPS through exhibition, through hearings, again, it is likely to be at least 12 to 24 months at best. In terms of risk, the aspects that the proposed SAP was seeking to address, I think it would be fair to say that in that time frame, we would really like to think we're not going to be seeing drastic impacts to those. You know, it happens, those type of impacts happen in a cumulative way over time in our experience, but again, can't say that with any sort of certainty about quantification of that. I think the other reference point is that this whole process, not just the Bruny Island SAP, has taken a very long time, and if that's a reference point, there is potential it could go on for longer than we anticipated as well.
Councillor Fox. Thank you. Anything further on discussion, Councillor Antoli?
Just really quickly, we are talking about the whole issue with the Bruny SAP in particular, I've noticed, and there's a lot of concern about the Swift Parrot collision. And this week I did ask questions of council staff about that. That replied all to us all, and we saw that advice. And the advice came back on the issue of what would happen to the protection of the Swift Parrot if we withdrew the Bruny SAP. We were told, and I'm quoting directly, that the inclusion of it is ultimately a decision for council, a policy decision. The conservation benefit may be modest. The area affected is relatively limited. The statewide provisions would be the preferable long-term home for such a measure. And we know the TPC does not like it when councils use a SAP to try and correct a perceived gap in the SPPs. We know that there's a Commonwealth recovery plan that encourages birth-safe design that the owners need to follow. We've seen information from a data set that the Kingborough Land Users Body has provided us that in the past 20 or over a 20-year period, zero birds were discovered dead from collision strike on Bruny. And where bird strike controls have been accepted elsewhere, we got a report today from a planner, Danielle Gray. She mentioned the Clarence LPS. They were site-specific and evidence-based. So we can't be putting a site-specific, a non-site-specific and non-evidence-based SAP over the entire island to protect the swift parrot that is a very migratory bird. Then we don't have the data. We haven't done the actual community consultation. And we can simply withdraw it. It can be done in the future through a normal LPS. So there seems to be a lot of fuss over that one issue to stop your motion from going ahead. And my contribution is, I think it's been dealt with under advice from the council staff. And if any of them want to pipe up and say that I'm wrong, I'd love to hear it.
Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I just wanted to bring us back to what we'd heard from Councillor Cordova, is that we're about to be presented with a deferral motion. Now, to help those listening along, there is a slight anomaly, I believe, in the meeting procedures, as we've encountered a few months ago when a deferral was put. There's no opportunity when a deferral is put to actually discuss the deferral. So I'm just hesitant that it would go straight into a deferral, and if a deferral is passed, just to be really clear for all councillors, anyone listening, what that would actually involve. Because I have concerns, I will not be voting for a deferral, and I'm glad that we're in discussion right now to actually air this. So we are currently at obviously well underway, many years of this process, but we're also at a pinch point in terms of the upcoming election, and we're also entering caretaker mode very soon. We only have one meeting before that. If we were to defer, I'd be really concerned with the time frame of not responding to the direction as put that we need to respond to, I believe, tonight. It would be unfair to let this sit for months and months again on end. We have been presented with a lot of information from staff, and I just wanted to put on the record that I think it's really important that we do make a decision tonight on this. I will be supporting the alternate motion as put forward, but I don't think we want to get into that yet because we're still in discussion, but I wanted to make it really clear what would happen. If we come out of motion here and it is deferred, there will be no further opportunity for anyone to hear anything. It will simply be deferred and we will have months and months of the community not having any certainty. So I think it's really important that we just have this opportunity to actually discuss that concept of deferral, and I want to make it clear that I won't be supporting it.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I just wanted to address the quotes that we've just heard to make sure that that people are given full, full context. Another quote that was there. So, I mean, it's interesting that Councillor Antolis avoided using the quote that says the greatest environmental risk would arise if the Bruny Island SAP is not supported at all. In that case, reliance on the standard TPS provisions alone could reduce the ability to manage cumulative impacts on biodiversity, landscape values, infrastructure constraints, and other locally significant environmental issues, resulting in a substantially higher level of risk. The critical, and that's it, end quote, the critical factor to understand, which I don't think was fully explained before by Councillor Antolis, is that on agricultural zoned land, priority vegetation, there's an exemption for priority vegetation overlays, which means that a high energy species like a swift parrot going from flowering gum to flowering gum, if there's habitat fragmentation, it means that that will drastically reduce a swift parrot's chance of having a successful breeding season. That's why it's desperately important that a SAP is implemented over Bruny Island, and that's why it's desperately important that it happens now rather than kicking the can down the road potentially for another generation. This is the moment that we have available to us to make amendments or to propose suggestions or implementations to the upcoming planning scheme. And there may be no other opportunity, or if there is another opportunity that comes in 2 or 5 or 10 or 20 years' time, the problem is that there's only some 700 adult birds of the swift parrot left. So it is a critical issue of the greatest import, and it's critical that there's an understanding of the urgency with which we face the cataclysmic demise of the swift parrot. So I think it would be a gross misrepresentation to say that by leaving the status quo as it remains, where there wouldn't be sufficient protection over the agriculturally zoned areas for habitat loss or habitat fragmentation, we'd be wise to pay attention to our federal obligations. The Bruny Island is one of 6 priority islands listed by the federal government for protection for that very reason, that there's a critically endangered species living there.
Councillor Dean.
Sorry, I don't know if my comments hit the mark. We descend into a bun fight over the swift parrot, and I'm like, let that happen, but can we please have that happen according to the meeting procedures? Because I feel like some people could talk for hours about the swift parrot, and because we're still in discussion, that would be allowed. Let's please, if anyone has comments, I implore to discuss the deferral idea. Otherwise, we come out of discussion and then let that bun fight happen in the allocated 5 minutes that you get, as per the alternate motion. Otherwise, we could be talking here all night. So if the comments... I'm not chairing the meeting and I can say whatever I want because we're in discussion, but can we please just get on with the fact that we either defer this or not, we discuss that, and if not, we can get on with the actual motion as you've put forward.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Dean, and I won't be in support of a deferral. I think this SAP decision is like a Damocles sword over the heads of the landowners affected by it. They need a decision. A new round of representations will begin shortly until the end of the year. The TPC does not deserve to have this thing hanging. They need to make a clear decision. And I think we just need to man up, like we were told by, I'm paraphrasing what Ms. Shakuti said, we need to man up and just make a decision tonight. We have the powers, we have the abilities to do so, we have the will. And on the swift parrot, since we are in discussion, the words may lead to this or may lead to that is not evidence, and it does not meet the Section 32 test that says that the SAP must be essential and required. So may is not evidence. May is an opinion. And so we don't go into the we don't go handing to the TPC SAPs based on opinions. We need evidence, it has to be required and has to be shown to be essential, because the current provisions and protections do not manage the risk. The previously quoted federal obligations are actually on the landowner, they're not on council. So council's not required by that federal guidelines to implement anything when it comes to the swift parrot. So that's my contribution. Thank you.
Councillor Richardson.
Can I move? We move out of discussion.
You certainly can. Is there a seconder to that motion?
Yeah. Councillor Bain. All those in favour of moving out of discussion, please say aye. Aye. To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Do I have a mover of a motion? Councillor Antoli.
I'd like to move your motion. Is that where we're at right now, or do we have to talk about the one that...
Well, I didn't get it. You were the only person to put your hand up, Councillor Antoni.
All right. Well, the motion that I would like to move is the one that you foreshadowed, if I may. We'll need a seconder, and I'll wait for that, and then there's an amendment that I need to flag.
Could you read the motion for the purposes of the recording, Councillor Antoni?
Right. Let's see how good my eyes are. Okay, just waiting for it to pop up on the screen. So this is the amended motion before us. Is that right, Ms. Morton? That the Planning Authority 1 receives and notes the Pitt and Sherry review of the draft specific area plans for Bruny Island. Bay Bluff and Bonnet Hill, I can read it, it's okay, as amended, endorses the provision of the Pitt and Sherry report to the Tasmanian Planning Commission in accordance with the Commission's directions and requirements. I would like to note, Acting Mayor, that we probably should put in there amended. Amended probably should be added to the end of Motion 1, Paragraph 1.
Yes, and it has been, Mrs. Morton.
It has, good. Yes. Thank you, Ms. Morton. Number 3, authorises the CEO to take any administrative actions necessary to facilitate its submission.
And...
Motion 2, Blackmores Bay Bluff.
They'll have to be moved separately, yep. Councillor Antoli. So we'll move Motion 1. Is there a seconder for that motion? Seeing Councillor Richardson first. Councillor Antoli.
I don't know if I could add any more sense to it than has already been added, so I'm all for it.
Are there any further speakers on this motion?
Procedural motion, if you please. Acting Mayor. Sorry, I missed it before. So because we all are saying we want consultation, that's why I'm moving the procedural
motion. You don't get to give a reason for your procedural motion, Councillor Cordova.
My procedural motion is that in order to gather community consultation...
Councillor Cordova, please stop.
I'd like the meeting procedures do not allow you to give a reason for your procedural motion. Please put the motion.
I move that we defer.
Is there a seconder for the motion? There being no seconder for the motion fails.
Thank you.
Are there any further speakers on the motion before us? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just, yeah, I'd like to speak a few words to this and really acknowledgement that it has been a long and complex planning process and noting that it has generated strong interest in a range of views from residents, landowners, community groups, environmental organisations and planning professionals. And I really want to thank everyone who's taken that time to write to Council. I think we've all had a really busy weekend and a busy Monday. They've attended meetings, they've contributed their knowledge and perspectives and really put a lot of work into it. And I guess for me, reflecting on that, it was reflecting on how much people care about these places and the importance of getting the planning balance right. And just that planning decisions are really simple. They require us to balance environmental protection, community aspirations, property rights, development expectations and the long-term interests of our municipality. And while people have different views about the outcome, I think we all share a desire for decisions that are thoughtful, evidence-based and transparent. And also just to this motion, I'd like to acknowledge the staff and the time they've taken on top of many of their workloads. Personally, I really value their input, their expertise and the time that they take to reply to all of their emails. So I just wanted to acknowledge that as we look at this first motion as well.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Dean.
Yeah, just a question. Thank you. Obviously, we hear just this motion. I thought it might just be helpful if staff might speak to very briefly as to why we're noting this right now and in response to some claims around the cost of the report that we're noting, could we just have reminded what why we went down this path and how much this report has cost ratepayers?
Ms. Shakuti.
Thank you. So the report alongside the Iron Ink report was commissioned in response or to fulfil a notice of motion from councillors to undertake an independent review of the LCZ application under the draft LPS, as well as the Bruny Island SAP and the Bonnet Hill and Blattmans Bay Bluff SAP. In total, I don't have it in front of me. It was about $150,000 for both reports, and that included attendance at the hearings by the consultants. So for this particular report, it's circa $35,000 to $40,000.
Mr. Stewart, did you have additional information to provide?
Yeah, thank you. I was just going to clarify the $150,000 was the two reports combined, not 100 each.
It's an important clarification. Councillor Dean, nothing further. Are there any further? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Mayor. I note that we're discussing now the Pitt and Sherry review of the draft SAPs, and I wanted to inject into that some context around the specific references made within the report, multiple references to swift parrots and the parlous state of their situation being critically endangered. Sugar glider predation on the mainland of Tasmania and Australia has resulted in the destroying of eggs and the killing of female nesting swift parrots. And that means that there's a sex-based bias of predation. It means that the population of swift parrots, because mostly female swift parrots and the eggs are getting predated, it's causing the demise of their population faster than a predator which randomly takes both males and females. And Bruny Island has no sugar gliders, so it's a refuge. And Bruny Island frequently hosts more than one-third of the total remaining global population of swift parrots. And so every single bird collision into a window or having its energy depleted by habitat fragmentation is one more nail in the almost but not entirely inevitable coffin of that species. And some people are completely unconcerned about that because they have more pressing priorities for the land use. And the subjective weight of priority that individuals give
the demise of the swift parrot survival chances will impact heavily on their views on a SAP for Bruni. But in my contribution, I'd like to introduce the concept of malignant normality. This is an idea that I learnt from Professor Chris McGrath at the University of Queensland. Professor McGrath says that malignant normality is a good term to describe our environmental planning and nature conservation laws that are presiding over nature's collapse, while we mainly just watch and document. We live in an anthropocentric world where cumulative impacts and unaccounted for negative externalities have resulted in a death by a thousand cuts to many habitats and ecosystems, leaving a minuscule fraction of what once was. And now, in the age of more frequent and severe weather events due to a change in climate, all bioregions are being affected. And those species clinging onto the brink are becoming even more precarious, and we carry on as normal, even though everything is changing. That's malignant normality. In Kingra, our existing environmental protections and our system of permitting development have seen environmental degradation, and it hasn't even delivered us out of a housing crisis where regular working people can't afford a safe and secure place to call home. That's malignant normality. And the solution we've heard from many, both members of the council and members of the public during the consultation, was let me do what I want with my land, it's mine, not yours, with precious little consideration for the unified whole, for the natural environment, or for the species with which we cohabit. When it comes to Australia's environment, we have the highest rate of mammalian extinction in the world, and here in Kingra, we play host to several species of plants and animals that are within years of extinction. And I know that there are many people in Kingra who genuinely don't care if the swift parrot or the 40-spotted pardalote or the Kyrstallis skipper or the black-hood sun orchid went extinct. And even when I sit up here and try to explain that we have obligations to protect these species under state, local and federal laws and even international conventions, laws and agreements, these people would remain completely unfazed and unimpressed. And I do note that even a councillor has just left the room, unfazed and unimpressed. And this same situation would have been true 100 years ago when the proto-conservationists first began arguing for the protection of the thylacine. But I see it as my role to speak up for the voiceless, to remind us of our Kingra Council strategic plan, which says that we must be a council which demonstrates strong environmental stewardship practices, and we must care for where we live and prepare for the future, and to protect the interests of the unborn, because if I were given a vote, I would have voted to save the thylacine. But I was never given that vote. And I've certainly heard loud and clear around this SAP debate that some property owners think that they shouldn't be curtailed in the various activities that they want to conduct on their property. And I've also heard that landowners argue that their land is different, that broad rules cannot capture their particular landscape character or prominent trees or native vegetation or other qualities of an individual parcel of land. And I understand why people feel so strongly. For many families, this land is their largest asset, worth hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars. They will defend what they see as their interests fiercely, even where those interests conflict with good planning, or indeed with the survival of the swift parrot. But what benefits one individual can sometimes harm the whole community. It's like standing up at a concert to get a better view of the stage. One person may see more clearly, but if everybody stands up at the same time, then nobody will see better. The collective view becomes worse. Planning exists to prevent that outcome. It's asking us to look beyond the individual titles and to consider the municipality as an integrated whole, not a fragmented mosaic, but an integrated whole, and to concentrate development where infrastructure already exists, and to protect the natural and cultural values that make Kingra such an attractive place for people to live and visit and work, and to encourage productivity, sustainability, livability, leadership and design excellence. And that means that not everyone will get the outcome that they want, and it means that not everyone gets to choose their own planning rules as they affect their property. A Woodbridge landowner may have their retirement plans around a high-density development curtailed. Um, Yeah, I seek one. I seek 2 more minutes.
Councillor Midgley, do you move that Councillor Cordova have an additional 2 minutes to speak? Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Fox, all those in favour, please say aye. To the contrary, no. It's carried unanimously. Please continue, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm making the point that we need to have strategic land use priorities that factor in the future and don't just consider individual cadastral titles, but they consider an integrated whole. And I'm empathetic or sympathetic with people who feel like their retirement plans are being curtailed when planning rules restrict what they're able to do. And the example I use is that somebody in Woodbridge, which may be zoned, they may be zoned village, and they've got in their retirement plans that they can build a high-density multi-unit development. And then when they discover that in order to respect village character, they will have to use particular materials and fit in with a particular urban grain and fit in with an existing village character, their project may become more expensive or more difficult, or indeed it may not even be able to happen. So of course they feel not just disappointed, but infuriated, betrayed, upset at the planning authority and upset at the councillors that they believe have failed to defend their interests. And those feelings are real, and I've said many times around this table that I feel for them. But planning cannot be reduced to the private expectations attached to each cadastral parcel. It has to protect a larger inheritance. And strategic planning requires us all to recognise that our municipality is something greater than the individual titles within it. We are a unique and a beautiful municipality with significant and threatened natural values. They are globally significant. We have obligations to protect them. And that's why it's critically important that we make sure the Tasmanian Planning Commission sees that this council endorses a SAP for Bruny Island. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Before you continue, I do want to raise an issue with you. In the course of your contribution on that motion, I believe that you made a personal reflection on another councillor and implied motive to another councillor's actions during the course of that contribution. I ask whether you would consider withdrawing and apologising for that personal reflection.
Yes, are you asking me to withdraw?
Would you withdraw and apologise, please?
The councillor didn't raise a point of order.
No, he didn't, but I'm the chair of the meeting.
Sure thing, I'm happy to withdraw.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Are there any further speakers on the motion? No, there being no further speakers, Councillor Antoli, do you wish to sum up?
Just very briefly, since Councillor Cordova has opened the door. Today, the ABC has announced the release of a major report on swift parrot predation by sugar gliders, and a bunch of scientists have studied, they've monitored 20 nests around 2 breeding seasons in various regions of Tasmania, and they have now confirmed, this is a direct quote from their report, there is no confirmed predation of swift parrots by sugar gliders that has been recorded during this study over 2 years, despite documented visitation to and entry into nest hollows. We must base these SAPs on the evidence and on the act, and not on feelings or narrative. And they use the word narrative. So I'm very satisfied that we just move ahead and vote on this now, and if we can probably put to bed talks about swift parrots, it'll probably be for the best of all of us tonight. Thanks.
The motion is, as moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Richardson, and it's as provided for on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. The motion is carried unanimously. Are there any further motions to be moved? Councillor Dean, I saw first. Councillor Dean.
Yeah. Motion two, as read. Sorry, Councillor Antoli, got napping there. Motion two, Blackness Bay Bluff SAP, that the Planning Authority, having considered the findings and recommendation of the Pitt and Sherry report, endorses the removal of the Blackness Bay Bluff component of the specific area plan from the draft local provisions schedule. And two, requests that this position be conveyed to the Tasmanian Planning Commission as part of the Planning Authority's response to the Pitt and Sherry report.
Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Antoli. Councillor Dean.
Look, I'm going to make my contribution brief because I think three is probably where the rubber's going to hit the road. I'm going to say I think it's one of the few things out of this whole thing is pretty much unified from everyone that's paid attention to this, and is that what's up there now, that the component of the Blackmans Bay Bluff and Bonnet Hill SAP, that the bluff is removed, and it's one of the clearest recommendations in the Pitt and Sherry report. Given that we've gone down this path, I am very comfortable with that recommendation and happy to move.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Are there any further speakers on this motion? There are no further speakers on the motion. I assume Councillor Dean has nothing further to say on the matter, and he doesn't. So I put the motion as displayed on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Are there any further motions on this? Councillor Antoli, you have a motion.
I would like to move a third motion that affects the Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill SAPs, that the Planning Authority notes the revised draft specific area plans for Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill as presented. Two, notes that the current revised draft SAP provisions differ substantially from the versions publicly exhibited during the LPS exhibition process. Three, determines not to endorse the revised Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill SAPs as the position of the Planning Authority at this time. Number four, determines that in light of the advice in the Pitt and Sherry report, the Planning Authority withdraws its support for the original Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill SAPs submitted with the 35F report from last year. Five, notes the potential planning value of a SAP to Bruny, however, considers further community consultation would be required after the implementation of the local provision schedule. And finally, six, requests that this resolution be provided to the TPC for its consideration.
Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Bain. Councillor Antoli.
I have no contribution at this point in time.
Are there any further speakers on the motion? Councillor Cordova. Yes, Councillor Cordova.
Yeah, so my question relates to the work that's been done by our council officers in light of the Pitt and Sherry report as it relates to Swift Parrots. And so the question is, I mean, this article that's just been referred to by Councillor Antoli specifically talks about habitat loss being the main critical impediment to the survival of the swift parrot, and so indeed it says it's not sugar gliders, it's habitat loss. Now, my understanding, which I'm seeking clarification on from our strategic planner, is that because the agricultural zone doesn't have priority vegetation, well, it's got an exemption of priority vegetation, that means that unless a SAP is put on Bruny, there may be habitat loss or fragmentation on agriculturally zoned land. So I'm just hoping that that issue can be explained to make sure that my analysis is correct.
Ms. Shikidi.
Thank you. So the swift parrot controls in the draft revised SAP being considered tonight primarily relate to collision risk. That arose from the federal, well, the Commonwealth Government's National Recovery Plan, which lists numerous different actions, and Councillor Antoli is right, from ranging from landowners through to the Commonwealth Government themselves, but also including local governments and the state government. In that action plan, it's recognises this from 2024, that Bruny Island is one of the areas in Australia that provides critical breeding habitat. It is also recognised that, yes, so habitat degradation and loss through development is one of the critical threats, and collision risk is a threat. It's not named as the critical threat. The action plan encourages landowners, but also lists state and councils as agency to help with that action to reduce collision risk. So in terms of the collision risk,
just for clarification, our proposed control is very similar to the one contained in the one of the SAPs for Clarence, in that it is site-specific in terms of that it's at the time of a development application, it is whether that property presents or the development presents a risk. And if it does, then what are the appropriate controls? And that's to be determined by a suitably qualified third party. And the controls can be for practical controls such as, you know, slightly changing the reflective surface of the glass, etc. The other control does relate to the vegetation protection, particularly for the agricultural zone. Under the new scheme, the agricultural zone and the low density residential zone don't have the priority vegetation layer or provisions applied. On Bruni, the circumstance is a bit different to what we have at the moment, where there isn't actually, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Stander, as much agricultural zoning at all, and quite a significant area of Bruni Island has been identified as having agricultural values, therefore to be zoned agricultural, and that's the direction that's been provided by the state. So that's how it's differing from our current scheme to the future scheme. So a lot more area being zoned agricultural and then not having the priority veg layer applied. And so the proposed control in the draft SAP was to simply apply that priority veg for on the agricultural zone in particular, which wouldn't prevent agricultural use or expansion of the agricultural use on those properties. It would be a mechanism where vegetation is considered at the application stage, and that the applicant then has to demonstrate that it is necessary for their proposed use and can't be avoided or minimised. And so that is, I suppose, one of the major controls that would assist in considering vegetation, not necessarily preventing vegetation being lost. It's just about considering it at the application stage for those areas, which then in turn would, I suppose, through an indirect link, be a benefit for retaining vegetation where clearing is not necessary.
Councillor Cordova.
Question. If this motion goes through as written, will that present an environmental gap? Will that present an environmental gap whereby native vegetation can be cleared under the agricultural zone?
Ms. Shakiti?
Noting that this has also got to go to the hearings and the Commission is the final decision maker, so we don't know what their decision making might be in regard to this. They may, for example, consider a different underlying zoning than agricultural, for example, rural. But theoretically, if the LPS be finalised, agricultural zone is retained and there's no SAP or priority veg layer, yes, that is a gap. And clearing could occur, I suppose, with no controls. However, I think it's important to note that through the discussions in this room that I have heard that there is intent to revisit a SAP, so I don't think we could say with certainty at this point in time that it'll be indefinite.
Councillor Cordova.
Question. Is it true, though, that by flagging right now that there is an intention to put on a SAP, isn't there some risk there that everybody listening will go out and clear native vegetation now before a SAP comes in? Is that not a risk?
think that's a risk, but a very cynical one.
Okay. Another question, if I may. I'm drawing our attention now to number three at this time. So the bit that I'm confused about is a deferral. I don't think that there's some kind of... Is there a deferral mechanism in the TPC process that allows us to put forward this SAP but neither endorse it nor disendorse it? Like, is there some mechanism to give the TPC the draft SAP and just say, you know, here's the SAP and not have a Kingborough Council position on it? And is there any utility in doing that?
Could we have the question
again?
Yep.
So the question is there some kind of deferral mechanism where we can present the draft SAP for Bruny Island to the TPC without either endorsing nor disendorsing it? Are we allowed to do that?
Mr. Stewart?
Thanks for the question. I'm not aware of any mechanism under LUPA for us to be able to do that. I will note that the Commission has powers to provide direction to Council, so if they wish to gain a copy of the work that has been done, they would be within their rights to provide Council a direction to provide it. But as I say, I'm not aware of any mechanism under LUPA for us to provide a non-endorsed document through to the TPC.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. And my next question is, because we've had some correspondence that said we need to do some positive action in terms of disendorsing a SAP, otherwise the previous SAP, which is substantially different from this one, remains before the TPC. Is that analysis accurate? And I think other councillors have received that correspondence saying we need to take some positive action to either endorse or disendorse this one, otherwise the old one remains.
This is true.
Through my understanding is Council is unable to withdraw any of the documents we have provided through to the TPC as part of this process. However, we are able to provide supplementary information through to the TPC. I think what was originally provided was a newly drafted specific area plan or plans that would have been provided to the TPC as the latest thinking of the planning authority. What you have now is a motion not to provide that that content to the TPC, and indeed foreshadow to the TPC the lack of support in light of the potentiary review that's been done of the previously supplied specific area plans. That doesn't withdraw them per se, but what it does is it withdraws the planning authority's support. So it might be a little bit of semantics, but it does pass the message on to the Planning Commission.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you for that answer. Through you, Acting Mayor, have we, the Kingborough Council, or any of the independent reviewers who have been tasked with looking at the Bruny Island SAP, have any of them or have we asked environmental agencies or experts, like the authors of the National Threatened Species Action Plan, what impact it would have to have this environmental gap extant if we don't support a SAP?
Ms. Cutie?
Can I clarify, is it the gap regarding the agricultural zone? Not to my knowledge, no.
So through you, Acting Mayor.
Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Does that present an environmental risk that needs to be assessed, should have been assessed? It appears to me that there's a misalignment between the National Threatened Species Action Plan, which is very clear about the need to protect Bruny Island, and what we're actually saying out loud, which is that there will exist an environmental gap if we don't have protections on the agricultural zone. So I'm just confused as to why we haven't sought any expert advice on that from an environmental stakeholder group.
Please don't take offence to this, but is the question, why haven't we?
Yes, that's one of the questions.
Well, could you phrase it as a question?
Why haven't we asked the authors of the National Species Action Plan or any other expert, environmental expert or stakeholder group, what's going to happen if we disendorse our SAP on Bruny Island? Why haven't we asked them?
Ishiki.
I don't have a specific answer to that. What I can offer is that there was a representation from NRE Tasmania through the exhibition that supported the SAP and those provisions.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'd like to amend this to change to change clauses 3 and 4, and to add a clause 7. Is now an appropriate time?
Do you have an amendment to move?
Yes. I do have an amendment to move. If now is an appropriate time to do so, I move an amendment that, and I've provided this by email. I can forward it to. I'm just wondering if I'll read it out loud, but should I also forward it to?
You should absolutely forward it to Mrs. Norton.
So, number one is that note the planning authority. I'll just send this right now as I read it. So the revised motion is that the planning authority, number one, notes the revised draft specific area plans for Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill as presented. Number two, notes the current revised draft SAP provisions differ substantially from the versions publicly exhibited during the local provision schedule exhibition process. Number three, acknowledges that Bruny Island possesses special environmental values, including breeding habitat for the critically endangered swift parrot and significant priority vegetation, which cannot be adequately managed by the standard state planning provisions alone. Number four, determines that a specific area plan is an important and necessary mechanism for the Tasmanian Planning Commission to consider adopting to protect Bruny Island's unique environmental values. Number five, endorses the modified draft Bruny Island specific area plan as presented in the officer's report for submission to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. Number six, requests that this resolution be provided to the Tasmanian Planning Commission for its consideration. Number seven, requests that the Tasmanian Planning Commission, in its assessment of the local provisions schedule, exercises its discretion to direct or undertake further community engagement on the modified SAP to ensure procedural fairness and natural justice for affected landowners.
I've got a motion to amend the motion from Councillor Cordova as stated by Councillor Cordova and as displayed on the screen. Is there a seconder for that motion? Seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova, on the amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Mayor. On the amendment, we have an opportunity, indeed we have an obligation, under the National Threatened Species Action Plan and the Federal Government's 30 by 30, among many other international conventions, state-level protections, and indeed a local obligation that I've surmised in our Kingborough Council strategic plan, which specifically talks about a council which demonstrates strong environmental stewardship practices. Under all those, and indeed more, our moral obligation to generations yet unborn to do everything that we can to protect a critically endangered species for which there are only maybe 700 left on planet Earth. What this particular motion does is find, I think, a happy balance whereby we are able to submit the SAP to the Planning Commission, but at the same time we don't make the same mistake that I believe was made last time regarding the Kingborough Bushland and Coastal Protection Zone, the PPZ, where the Planning Commission came back to us and said you needed to go to community consultation. So this in the motion recognises that we understand that there are substantive changes between this version of the SAP and the one that was publicly exhibited. We recognise that and we seek the discretion of the TPC to direct us as to how we best run this new draft SAP through the community so that everybody gets to have their say. And that's why specifically the Clause 7 is so crucial here, that it ensures procedural fairness and natural justice for affected landowners. But at the same time, it doesn't leave what we've determined to be is an environmental gap, whereby if we just kick the can down the road for another day and say, we're just going to allow the Tasmanian planning scheme to protect the agricultural zone, well, because there's no priority veg overlay on that particular zone, it leaves this environmental gap, whereby people can fragment habitat, which, because it's a high energy species that goes from flowering gum to flowering gum, every time they have to travel further, because of habitat fragmentation, because of a mosaic of native vegetation loss, it means that they have much less chance of having a successful breeding season. So we have an obligation, and we have a mechanism now to be able to do both, to put forward a draft SAP, but also undertake meaningful community consultation. And to be frank, I think it was interesting that we decided not to defer this, because I think I haven't heard anybody say that they don't want community consultation. Everybody's saying we do want meaningful community engagement. And then when I proposed that we have a special meeting and get the community involved and have our say about it, nobody but me wanted to defer this matter to have community consultation. So nevertheless, here we find ourselves. Here is a mechanism by which we can have that community consultation, but also we don't have to leave a gaping environmental gap that leaves Bruny Island unprotected. So I absolutely urge you to please support this, and if you don't, all I can do is apologise to future generations if we leave the swift parrot to suffer a death by a thousand cuts. This municipality plays a critical role in protecting the swift parrot that lives within our municipality, and it would be a damn shame if we abrogated that responsibility.
Are there any further speakers on the amendment? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Cordova, for raising really important matters that we can just, put our heads in the sand and not think about. But fundamentally, I support the amendment to this motion because it does recognise the revised provisions are different from those originally exhibited, but it also acknowledges the importance of further community consultation and retains the planning rationale for protecting Bruny Island's unique values through place-based planning. And for me, it's about finding the right balance. I didn't feel like the first motion presented had that right balance. We need to listen to the community, ensure transparency and confidence in the process, while also making sure we do not lose sight of the environmental and landscape values that we are seeking to protect. As we can see in the Pitt and Sherry report, Bruny Island is one of Kingborough's most significant environmental and landscape assets. It has outstanding biodiversity values, important habitat, coastal and rural landscapes, and a strong sense of place that is valued by residents, visitors, and the broader Tasmanian community. So for those reasons, I'll be supporting this amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'd like to just speak as to why I won't be supporting this amendment. My understanding is that one of the fears about the swift parrots, here we go again, is the sugar gliders. I think there's enough evidence on the table that I've shared that that's a furphy, especially on Bruny Island. And the second is a loss of vegetation, which is, of course, a real threat. But Bruny appears to be a Shangri-La for swift parrots in Tasmania. So I don't seem to see much of a problem there. They seem to be going there because it's working for them. My understanding, and I'd like council officers to correct me on this, agricultural land, if clearance is to be done for agricultural land, doesn't have to go to the Forest Practice Acts Board for approval. Because it's managed under the FPP, is it not?
Mr. Stander, welcome.
Thank you. I almost had a conversation here on the side. It depends. There's a mechanism outside the planning scheme, you're quite correct, where applicants can go through the Forest Practices Act, but it's got its own set of rules and regulations, so it might not be necessarily a straightforward process for everybody. They need to go through that process and they need to meet those tests.
Yeah. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. And I'd like, during the course of the week, council officers mentioned to me that if the SAP doesn't go ahead and that priority vegetation gap happens, the TPC could easily close the gap by asking the area to be rural zone. Is that not correct?
Councillor Antoli. Sorry, no. You're going to have to excuse me. It's been a long day. Councillor Antoli asked the question. He's not going to answer his own question, Ms. Shakuti.
It is one option that they might look at, yes.
Yeah. And my understanding, if I may continue.
Councillor Antoli.
My understanding is that the standard priority veg area would then apply in that rural zone.
Ms. Shakuti.
That's correct. Right. And I do know that rezoning agricultural land rural was raised in post-lodgement discussions with the Commission. So the alternative is live on Council's own account. Officers prefer the ag zone for consistency with the statewide map. But can I ask whether a preference between available instruments is the test for applying a SAP? Preference, to me, doesn't express necessity.
Ms. Chikiti. Mr. Stanton.
Thank you.
I'm happy to answer that question. Maybe a bit of context. So Council's first draft LPS that was submitted to the Tasmanian Planning Commission didn't propose the ag zone for Bruny Island. It was the rural zone. What happened through the course of the post-lodgement discussions was the Commission actually asked Council to consider a broad application of the agricultural zone, which then brought on the discussion for SAP to deal with the natural values. So you're quite right, and it might most probably will answer your previous question as well. The Commission might go back and consider alternative ways of dealing with that. It depends, I guess, on their appetite to make further zoning changes. So it's really in their hands how they want to approach it from here on.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Look, I think there's been enough discussion in just that small in those questions and answers to say that this appears to be available to the TPC a whole bunch of tools and options to protect Bruny without the need for a SAP, just on the basics. And as I understand, I've done a bit of research, there is no SAP in all of Tasmania over agricultural zoned land currently. This would be a first. Could anyone comment on that?
Mr. Stander, can you take a swing at that one?
It will be a guess. I suggest most probably not. The only one that I think there might be a SAP, it's not necessarily a SAP, it's a particular purpose zone, is Flinders Island.
Flinders Island, yeah. It's
PPZ. Yep. Thank you. Part of the reason is agricultural zone is for the production of food. And so putting SAPs to stop them from being able to produce food by, with this a gap with the vegetation layer, is a conflict. So it's really not our job, I think, to put a SAP in place to fix a SPP perceived conflict. And it hasn't been done anywhere else. But as I said earlier, Bruny is a haven, a Shangri-La, a sanctuary for the swift parrot. They are thriving there. We've received evidence from the Kingborough Land Users Body today, over the weekend, that there have been zero confirmed swift parrot deaths due to bird strike in 20 years. Zero. So I think we just need to stick with the evidence. We just need to stick with the strict measures of the test. We don't want this SAP to be knocked on the head by the TPC because we haven't done our bit, and that's why I won't be supporting any change to the already publicised motion number 3.
Councillor Dane.
I'll just go with one question so Councillor Dane can have a go. I just want to kind of get a response as to what we're actually talking about in practical terms from a planning perspective around the provisions that and sort of what that would mean, because we're talking a lot of, it seems like we're somehow making a binary choice tonight. It's either we make the swift parrot extinct or, you know, or the opposite. I feel like we're stuck in some serious claims, but actually I'd just like to hear what are we, for the person that maybe is just listening in and going, what is going on? What are we talking about in terms of these provisions? What would be the impact on someone that's looking to develop on Bruny in terms of the provisions that are put in place? And are they currently in place now? Is my 2-point question.
Ms. Chikiti?
Thank you. And I might...
Please feel free.
Please feel free to jump in, Mr. Stanford, if needed. I'll separate from collision to vegetation. Yes, I believe collision is in the current scheme, but it's more prescriptive. No.
Maybe I'll jump in. Collision and risk controls, they're not in the Kimberley Interim Planning Scheme, but I guess it's a standard condition for permits that's being issued over the last decade or so, and the provisions that's been I guess, suggested in the modified SAP is very similar to those, and mostly is also looking at similar provisions in the Clarence LPS.
So, yeah, apologies. Those controls have been utilised under the current scheme. The provisions proposed are more risk-based and on the particular development, and also allow for more practical controls to be in place for that collision risk. And I think it's important to understand too, it's only for certain design elements of a development. So not every window, for example, on a development, it's when there's two opposing large panels or when the reflectance is like a mirror. So that would be only when it is considered, and only if it's considered a risk on the property. I think we'd have to acknowledge that that is that control would form many different controls being implemented across Australia, and it isn't the definitive control for the Swift Parrot. It's a it contributes, and it would encourage design to reduce that risk. In terms of vegetation, again, like I said, the literature and data shows that Bruny Island's important habitat. It shows that encroachment through development is one of the key risks. In terms of how it will impact someone who has a property zoned agricultural, it wouldn't prevent them from clearing to increase or commence agricultural activity on that zone. It would be used as a assessment for that application if a forest practices plan doesn't apply, where it's demonstrated that clearing is necessary to do the activity applied for. If it is and it can't be avoided or minimised and everything else is met under the scheme, it would then be approved.
Councillor Dean.
Follow up on that. How much land is currently zoned agricultural in Bruny?
Mr. Stander.
Good question. I don't have the hectares in front of me, but in the agenda, there's a map showing in the draft SAP the area that we're council's proposing to apply the priority vegetation, and that's the area on the map. The majority of it is North Bruny, so it's a quite a, and it applies to extensive large parcels of land. Yeah, so I think you kind of need to look at that in conjunction with the other provisions in the planning scheme, but that roughly gives you an indication of the area that it covers.
Councillor Dean. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a question. So we'll be submitting the Pitcherry independent report to the Planning Commission if the motion motion's already gone through. So they'll be receiving an independent report. My question is, what options do the Planning Commission have at their disposal to address any concerns that they get from that report?
Ms. Shikudi or Mr. Stander? Mr. Stander.
This is the tricky part. We don't know what the Commission can do. The Commission can, as previously mentioned by the CEO, they could potentially seek further information, and that may include Council's modified drafting of the SAPs. They may request that. They could potentially proceed with the hearings and just interrogate the SAP, having regard to what Council submitted in 2020, our responses in the 35F report and also the Pitcherry report, which is very likely that they will look at all the evidence. I guess one of the avenues that they have to their disposal, if Council makes a decision tonight not to proceed with the SAP, is more likely that they will issue a direction to Council to confirm the underlying zonings, and that potentially would mean we need to reconsider the zoning on Bruny Island, I guess, without the SAP. So, but I can't really talk for the Commission. We don't know, but I think the last option is a very likely option.
Councillor Bain.
I'm going to make a contribution in relation to the amendment. I won't be supporting the amendment.
I believe, puts the cart before the horse. And interestingly, we've heard both variations of the cart and horse argued this evening by Councillor Cordova, because the first step was deferral for consultation prior to endorsement, and now we've got a motion that would seek endorsement prior to consultation. I'm not comfortable with a situation where we accept that there is a variation so significant that endorsement is required. Consultation is required, but choose to endorse in advance of that consultation, and that's why I will be voting against the amendment. Are there any further speakers on the amendment? There being no further speakers on the amendment, Councillor Cordova to sum up.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. The critical distinction here is that there's two things going on. There's the collision risk, and then there's also the agricultural zone and the vegetation issue, which means that there could be habitat loss and further fragmentation. There's all of the layering on top of that of our international obligations and our state and federal obligations, and as I've tried to make clear, I think our moral obligations that, it's so abundantly obvious to me that there are people around this table for whom it just doesn't matter. And what I'm trying to make clear is that every time somebody builds the wrong or the inappropriate balcony, balustrade, the inappropriate glass that isn't angled or is reflective or has two pieces of glass so that it looks like a through line for a swift parrot flying through, each death of a swift parrot is another nail in a coffin of an entire species, and we just do not have the right. We do not have the right. I know that we're a very anthropocentric society where we think that man has dominion over the natural world, but it's not true, and it's morally wrong. And it's my duty to speak up for the voiceless, and it's my duty to make sure that we do everything we can within our power to protect this beautiful refuge that is Bruny Island. And I just found it fascinating to hear from Councillor Antoli that apparently the critically endangered swift parrot, for which there's a National Threatened Species Action Plan, is so-called, and here's a quote from Councillor Antoli, thriving on Bruny Island. On what planet? On what planet is a critically endangered species that's in decline thriving? I mean, there's just such a disjunct in our positions. And I don't know how to make people care, and it breaks my heart that that people's individual self-interest is absolutely overcoming the intergenerational stewardship that we owe to people to maintain and do everything that we can to protect a critically endangered species. Bruny Island is special. It's internationally significant, and it's been recognised as such by many people smarter than me. And we in this council have the ability to do something about it. And I fear that if we don't at least try, with this draft SAP, I fear for the future. Thank you.
We have before us a motion to amend, which was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley. It is as displayed on the screen. All those in favour of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no.
No.
A show of hands is required. All those in favour of the amendment, please raise your hand. Councillors Fox, Cordova and Midgley. And all those against, please raise your hand. Councillor Antoli, Councillor Dean, Councillor Bain, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. The motion to amend is lost, and debate resumes on the substantive motion moved by Councillor Antoli. At this time, I'm going to speak in favour of the motion. Much of what I've already said, or much of what I want to say, I've already said. So I'm not going to repeat anything that I have already said. Very briefly, though, the reason why I saw fit to draft this motion was that I do agree with community concern that the draft SAP, as has been presented to us, is substantially different from the original, and so substantially different from the original that there should be further consultation before it's
introduction if that is what the TPC chooses to do. I want to make very clear, given some of the accusations that have been made here tonight, that I do believe that Bruny Island has intrinsic environmental values that are worthy of protection. That does not negate the need for appropriate consultation in relation to these matters, and I do not believe the council is in a position to endorse the modified SAP that's been presented to us, however correct I may feel that its provisions are, without further consultation, given the path that this council has been on with respect to this matter. The last thing that I want to say, and it might come as a shock to some here, is that nobody's perfect, especially not me, and I have stuffed up part of the motion, and so I'm going to need somebody to move an amendment, I think, to regularise it. Paragraph 4, I've referred to the 35F report, which is incorrect. The 35F report is the report to the Commission on Representations. So to have the effect that it should, number 4 should actually read, determines that in light of the advice in the Pitt and Sherry report, the Planning Authority withdraws its support for the exhibited Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill specific area plans. Stop. If somebody's of the same mind, Councillor Richardson, you move that amendment, and seconded by Councillor Rantoli. I feel like I've just spoken, but, oh, sorry, it's actually your amendment, Councillor Richardson.
I think you've spoken.
Are there any further speakers on that amendment? Oh, well, sorry, actually, apologise. Is it acceptable to the mover and seconder?
Yes.
It's acceptable to the mover, is it? Then it forms part of the substantive motion without debate. Sorry, again, it's been a long day. So 4 now reads, determines that in light of the advice in the Pitt and Sherry report, the Planning Authority withdraws its support for the exhibited Bruny Island and Bonnet Hill specific area plans. Stop. Okay. Are there any further speakers on the substantive motion? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, and thanks for clarifying that. I think that is what did confuse me, that number 4, when I read that originally. It's a complicated one when you have a motion before you as a councillor, but you don't support all of the points that are there. But I thank you, Acting Mayor, for putting the time and effort in putting this together, because I think it's made for probably a better process meeting as well. So thank you very much. But I'd like to explain why I can't support this motion in its current form. But I do acknowledge the intent behind the motion. It recognises that the revised Bruny Island specific area plan is significantly different from what was originally publicly exhibited, and that the community confidence and consultation are important parts of good planning. I agree these matters need to be considered. But my concern, which I guess I raised really before with the amendment by Councillor Cordova raised, was my concern is that the motion moves too far by withdrawing Council's support for the Bruny Island specific area plan rather than recognising the planning value of a SAP while allowing the provisions to be refined. A specific area plan is not about preventing development. It's about ensuring development occurs in a way that is appropriate for the place and considers the environment, landscape and community values that make Bruny Island unique, which we have heard, and I'm sure that we all agree, and I'm sure community and many, many people who visit the island agree with that too. My concern with the proposed Motion 3 is that it risks losing the planning intent identified through the Pitt and Sherry review. I believe there is a difference between saying that the SAP needs further refinement and consultation and saying Council should withdraw its support for the need for a SAP. I believe we can acknowledge the concerns raised through the process while still supporting the principle of a Bruny Island specific area plan. Thanks, Acting Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Are there any further speakers on the substantive motion? If there are no further speakers on the substantive motion, Councillor Antoli, do you wish to exercise your right of reply?
Just a small one, and if I may. I'd like to thank you, Acting Mayor, for the work that you've been doing behind the scenes to get these various motions over the table, and I want to thank you for giving me the time of your day to talk it through and to go backwards and forwards. I want to thank the staff for working with you for some of those curveballs I threw at you regarding the report this afternoon that you've gotten fixed and amended. Thank you very much. There's a lot of work there. I would like to thank the community for their patience and at the same time apologise to the community for what they've gone through. I don't want to point blame anyone or anything, but you deserve an apology, not because I've done anything to you, because you know where I stand on these matters, but I don't believe we've handled this process well at all. It's on the record, and I believe the TPC has already made their opinion about that clear as well during the representation meetings, the ones that I sat in on and heard. We received a rather interesting email today from a well-known and respected planner who really castigated us for the way we've handled this. And I think this, what we're doing tonight, sets some wrongs right. We want to see Bruni's natural values protected. I believe that the SAP will not do that. I think it'll be a burden on the people without the legal means to do so, and it's important for us, in my view, that this motion go ahead, because paragraph 3 declines to endorse revised plans the community has never seen, and paragraph 4 withdraws the original plans to the 2024 versions that do not remain before the commission by default. So that's well done. Weighing those environmental questions, the values on Bruni and at Bonnet Hill are real, and paragraph 5 records that. So this motion does not close the door on a Bruni plan. It simply says such a plan must come the right way. There needs to be a strategic review of what is needed for Bruni, and a SAP should only be done after that review is done, so that we have the evidence, the consultation and the evidence that can stand before the Commission. And if we need to do it based on the evidence, we can just put in place a future LPS change going forward. Because protection that cannot survive scrutiny is not protection, in my view, as the Commission's Margate decision showed us in June. And Commonwealth law continues to protect threatened species on every block in Bruni, regardless of tonight's vote. And because Bruni is recognised as a place where the swift parrot is doing well, it's obvious that it's thriving there. It may not be thriving in other places, but on Bruni it is. And that's all. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. The motion is as displayed on the screen. It's moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. To the contrary, no.
No.
A show of hands is required. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Councillor Antoli, Dean, Bain, Richardson and Street. And those against, Councillor Fox, Councillor Cordova and Councillor Midgley. The motion is carried. Before we move on to the next agenda item, noting that we have debated those matters for over an hour and a half, I'm going to adjourn the meeting for 10 minutes for a break. The meeting will reconvene at 7:28 p.m.
Yeah.
Thank you. We're back. The meeting now recommences. The Planning Authority adjourns and open session recommences at 7:29 p.m.
With item 14.2, proposed road name Defend the Island Way, and a recommended motion on page 300. Do I have a mover for the recommended motion? Moved in Councillor Cordova and seconded in Councillor Bain. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. A really positive story here. I think that we are all we're all great fans of the exciting work that's been done by the Jack Jumpers and the Jewels, and it's wonderful to have the High Performance Centre open. I even have their sticker on the back of my laptop here, and I'm very pleased to be able to progress the proposal that we endorse the name Defend the Island Way. This has come from the Jack Jumpers and the Jewels as a suggestion of theirs. I do note that it comes with a bit of a caveat there around what used to be called the Nomenclature Board. But nevertheless, I think our first step as a council is to recognise that we've had the approach made to us and endorse it, and then leave it to the powers that be, Place Names Tasmania, to make their decision regarding their guidelines and any of the issues that they have. But from my perspective, I think it's an exciting way of saying yes, and so I'm pleased to endorse this good news story.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Are there any further speakers? Councillor Fox.
I endorse it in principle, but I'm just wondering what the Place Names Tasmania concerns might be. Have we got any indication?
Mr. Smith.
Yes, Place Names Tasmania have two concerns with the proposed name. The first is that Island Way is a double generic, which under their guidelines they don't like. And the second is that they don't like road names that reflect an business name, and the Jack Jumpers have a foundation that is known as Defend the Island.
Councillor Fox.
What was the last word?
Defend the Island.
Defend, yes. Yes, I can imagine. Okay. Yeah, it's confrontational, basically. So...
It's not that it's confrontational. It's the name of a foundation, and their guidelines seek to avoid situations where you have the name of an organisation, or in this case a foundation, that is then duplicated within a place name.
Councillor Fox.
But at the same time, I guess the road does lead to the to this particular business, really. Are there any other businesses or entities on this road, or is it just the short road that goes to this particular business?
Mr. Smith.
The Jack Jumpers are the only residents on this particular section of road.
Thank you.
Are there any further? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just to, I guess, add to what's already been said, I guess it's important to note that, you know, this is a road leading into our sporting precinct, and shortly there'll be, you know, Tasmanian Devils football men, women, children representing the state regularly driving this road. We already have soccer players, cricket players, netball players and many more sporting codes all striving to represent the state of their chosen sport. And I'm sure this quote resonates with many of the sporting groups that have the road named Defend the Island Way as you enter that part of the sporting precinct, I think is fitting for the area. And so, in my opinion, and I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Are there any further speakers on the motion? Councillor Dean.
Just a question. If they take such concern with the name, indulge me, are there any backups?
Mr. Smith.
Sorry, is the question, are there any alternatives? We haven't been given an alternative from the Jack Jumpers. They're keen to pursue this name, and bearing in mind that the guidelines from Place Name Tasmania are exactly that, they're guidelines, so we're hoping that, you know, Council's formal support will help to get it over the line.
Councillor Dean? Are there any further contributions on the motion? Very briefly, I'm supportive of the motion. Gives me an opportunity to lament the fact that they changed the name of the Nomenclature Board to Place Names Tasmania, when I love the word nomenclature. Just as an aside, we opened the new Jack Jumpers High Performance facility
last week. It is a magnificent facility and a magnificent contribution to the Kingborough community, which I believe, or I'm led to believe, is already paying dividends in terms of the community contribution that was promised. And I see this as being another small way to promote the Kingborough Sports Precinct and the fact that it is becoming one of the great sporting precincts in Australia, let alone easily the best in Tasmania. Are there any further speakers on the motion? No? Councillor Cordover in reply.
Let's go Jackies, let's go Jules, defend the island.
The motion is as moved by Councillor Cordover and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
To the contrary, no. The motion is carried unanimously. Item 14.3, Kingborough Sports Precinct Oval Names, and a recommended motion on page 302. Do I have a mover of the recommended motion? Please. Councillor Cordover moves, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have strong feelings about this one because I myself have been rather confused over the time when we've been having the names of these ovals be 1, 2, 3 and 4, but in no obvious consecutive order when looked at from aerial photographs. This is another really exciting, I think, and positive news story where we're providing the opportunity to sports clubs in that precinct to celebrate and commemorate the people who have been so important for their clubs or who have reached amazing heights for their sport or who have left a legacy of amazing volunteerism or any number of amazing positive things for them and their clubs. So I think this is what's really exciting about this opportunity to provide the Tasmanian Devils Football Club, the Kingborough District Cricket Club, the Tigers Football Club, the invitation to submit proposed names to council for their respective home grounds within the Kingborough Sports Precinct. It's really exciting because it means we will have a fantastic legacy. It will be so much more meaningful than just having over 1, 2, 3 and 4. And it's also a really great opportunity for us to celebrate those people within our community who mean so much and to say thank you. So I commend the motion and I'll take this opportunity to say thank you to those four organisations. Thank you to those three organisations, rather, who have done so much for our community thus far, and we look forward to a wonderful and meaningful relationship going forward.
Thank you, Councillor Cordover. Are there any further contributions on this motion? Very briefly, Councillor Cordover hit the nail on the head. Having a situation in which ovals 1 and 2 are inside ovals 3 and 4 and nobody knows which order they're in is clearly ridiculous. And it is a great opportunity for these clubs to name their oval something that is important to them, so I fully support it. If there are no further contributions, anything in reply, Councillor Cordover? No. I'll put the motion as moved by Councillor Cordover and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Moving to item 14.4, petition, Kingborough Mountain Bike and Dog Park, and the recommended motion on page 306. Is there a mover for the recommended motion? Councillor Antoli moves and seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Antoli.
Yes, just briefly, the good people who use the Kingborough Mountain Bike and Dog Park area have put in a petition to protest the demolition of it, and that was sent to council on the 20th, and even though technically components of it didn't meet our normal requirements around the lodging of a petition, council has graciously, and I commend them in that, given it special place to actually discuss and for a proper recommendation to come from council officers to council for endorsement, basically to say, look, we understand, we are going to be doing great work in building an alternative, and then the temporary one that we have in place will be used somewhere else in the LGA, but we're not going ahead to stop the building of such an important precinct and high performance centre, which of course I believe is fully endorsed by everyone here.
Are there any further contributions on the motion? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you to the people who have put forward and signed the petition. I think it's, you know, we want to hear from all members of the community, and things sometimes speak strongly to our hearts. So we all have a right, a democratic right, to do this. I guess where there is, you know, gain, there's sometimes a bit of pain as well. I, you know, personally love the mountain bike park and took my kids there, and the dog area as well. Haven't been to the training facility, but the dog area. So I'm reading the next one. They are really important assets. And myself, as a councillor who did vote to support this, I do not support the stadium and where that is, but I saw this as a really important asset for our community and the many things that sit alongside that, and also the side bits around the Gormley Drive and the upgrade of that, and the bicycle active transport link to there, the hopefully the one connection to Spring Farm. Like, I think this provided so many other benefits that I personally couldn't say no to. But I do acknowledge that it is a big loss. The mountain bike park, I feel like as a parent you sometimes have this stage where your kids are really into that, and then all of a sudden that grows and they might not want to go there. So there will be a bit of a gap there, but we are looking at a compromise of a little track down in the Kingston Park precinct. And I really thank staff for acknowledging that the community really likes this, and looking at a modular pump track sort of down there. So it's not like we've fully, we've heard the community, we know it was a really important asset, and it will be replaced in a couple more years, and I'm sure the designs and community will have input into that. So we're not losing it forever. We are looking at alternatives. Staff are really doing their due diligence and best to that. But, as I said, sometimes when there's gain, there's a little bit of pain, but I know that we are working towards a positive outcome for everyone.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
I just have a question, Acting Mayor. So it's noted in 2.2 that there were about 162 signatories, but the majority of them came from outside of Kimbra. What is our position? What is the council's position, hypothetically, if we ever get a petition on a matter to do with us and all the names come from outside of Kimbra? What happens then? Do we even accept it? What's the procedure?
Mr. Smee.
Council's obliged to accept any petition that complies with the conditions of the Local Government Act. The number of signatories that make up local residents is a factor that is considered as part of the decision-making process. So if there were no signatures coming from residents, I would suggest that would be a fairly strong weighting given in the consideration of whatever the petition was about.
Yeah, Councillor Antoli.
No, that's all. Thank you.
Councillor Fox.
I understand that the mountain bike park will be rebuilt later. Will it be roughly in the same area, and will it be to the same standard that the current one is?
Mr. Smee.
Much of the mountain bike park will be retained as is. It's more the pump track and the top section of the mountain bike park that it will be rebuilt, and it is going to be rebuilt better than what we currently have.
Councillor Fox.
That's good to hear, because I have heard from young people, some of them in their late 30s are using that pump track and that area, and they think it's one of the best in Tasmania. They come from a long way to use it. So they may not have signed the petition, but I know that it is very popular and very well known and very well built. And I think it's good that we've got those experts in our community that have built it and will rebuild it. That's great. Thank you.
Are there any further? Councillor Dean.
Just on this issue of the mountain bike not being completely taken down, can I just clarify, will users have access over the next little while to that part of the mountain bike park?
Mr. Smee.
The site is a construction site now, so there won't be access to it, no.
Councillor Antoli.
Councillor Dean.
Thanks. I just wanted to clarify because as good as it is that most of it's being retained, just want to make it really clear to people that it is not going to be open for the next little while, and that is obviously disappointing, but I think it's still a net gain for those users, noting that there aren't actually many mountain bike parks in Greater Hobart, with Clarence Glen Orchard being the only ones. And part of the reason I'm guessing why there are a bunch of signatures that came outside of Kingborough is because a lot of people do come to a lot of our facilities, whether it's Kingston Park, the playground, or the mountain bike track, or whatever it is, they do come outside of Kingborough. But I just want to clear it up. Thank you, Mayor.
Any further? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm just conscious that it does also mention the dog park, so question around the Maddox Road and what the status of the Maddox Road dog park is currently.
Mr. Smee.
The Maddox Road facility will be open on Wednesday of this week.
Councillor Bain. Any further contributions on the motion? Councillor Rantoli in reply. No. I'll put the motion moved by Councillor Rantoli and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye. To the contrary, no. Motion is carried unanimously. Moving to page 14.5, item 14.5, petition dog obedience training facility at Cedrook Reserve and the recommended motion on page 308. Do I have a mover for the recommended motion? Moved in Councillor Fox and seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
I think it's good news, basically, that the organiser of the petition expressing opposition to the proposed relocation of the Southern Obedience Club to Sedgebrook Reserve, Bonnet Hill, be advised that this option is no longer being pursued by council. I think there'll be a lot of relief in the Bonnet Hill area. And I think it's a good decision, and I understand that an alternative site has been located at Drew Point, and there's been negotiations with Taswater that we can rent that property for the use of the Dog Walking Association. So I think it's a win-win all round, and well done to staff for managing that situation. Thank you.
Are there any further? Councillor Richardson.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to add to that congratulations. So well done to the CEO for negotiating with Taswater, and well done to Taswater for coming to the party. That's great. And also well done to, I guess, both parties in the Southern Obedience Dog Club and also the residents of the Bonnet Hill area. Both parties were fair and reasonable throughout this process whilst putting their points forward. I met with both groups, and everyone was just after a satisfactory outcome, which, again, through the hard work of the CEO, we have come to. So a good news story all round.
Thank you. Councillor Rantoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I know that whenever we talk about dogs, it becomes a vexing issue. So I do sympathise with the CEO and some of his staff of what they went through on this one, so thank you very much. I personally believe there are aspects of this move to Drew Point that is a material plus for the Southern Obedience Club, and one of them is that they will have sole access, as I understand it, to their particular area, which when you are training puppies is very important because of the potential for cross-infection from an adult dog to a puppy that hasn't probably been fully vaccinated yet. So that's a material plus. That was not available to them at the Sedgebrook option. And also they're going to be close to a great little cafe and toilets, which was something that we would have had. We couldn't have never provided a cafe, and the toilet situation was also vexing with the Sedgebrook option. So hopefully Sedgebrook is used appropriately, and I just want to commend the staff and Daniel Kay as well, who's worked hard on this.
Are there any further speakers on the motion? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Yes, I would also like to thank everybody involved, but I hope that we've taken a bit of a learning from this around how we engage and what we call engagement with the community, where we presented something that some work had already been done and the community had perceived that, you know, some works had already been, but discussions and measurements and things like that, and it kind of became as a bit of a surprise to the community. So I hope that we can maybe take a different approach if this ever comes up in the future and consider those neighbouring residents that, you know, everyone can be on the sort of same platform of conversation initially, I guess. Let me look at our engagement or what we call engagement and consultation. But, yeah, look, not to dismiss the great outcome, the negotiations that have happened and the positive news for the future.
Are there any further speakers on the motion? No, Councillor Fox in reply.
I guess we haven't really emphasised the cost saving that we've made by making this decision. And not only don't we have to build a toilet, and we don't have to provide shelter, which was another thing, and also we're not isolating a community from their only park in their area. So I think there's so many pluses to this decision, and again I thank everyone around the table who's mentioned those things, and congratulations. Thank you.
The motion is moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour please say aye. To the contrary, no. That motion is carried unanimously. Can I have a mover, please? And I note that the following motion was not included in the agenda, but I ask for a mover that the appendices to the agenda be noted. Moved Councillor Midgley and seconded Councillor Rantoli. Councillor Midgley, if there's anything, any comment to make.
Thank you. Just there's so much information in there. I employ everyone to, you know, really have a look from the community about the reports that are attached, and especially the environmental and biodiversity NRM team's report. There's just so much information in there. I think we can, you know, sometimes underestimate and forget the great programs that council does, and I think we just need a lot more positive news stories out in our media and social media as well. So grab a few of these things and share those positive news stories and see the great work that council's doing. Just even noting like the Landcare program, how there was 35 volunteers, they cleaned up 170 kilograms of rubbish along a 1.5 kilometre of a creek corridor on the Whitewater Creek. We have so many caring people in our community who really value our natural areas. I'm sure the National Tree Days that have been held over the weekend and ones that I've attended recently in the community, there's just some really some gems out there, some great people doing great work, and I think this report always really highlights that. So let's get on board and share some of this stuff in our socials.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Are there any further contributions or questions on the appendices? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I don't know if I've noticed this before, but there's pretty much a one-month gap between the activities of the CEO, the reporting period, and now. Is that normal? Do we normally have a one-month gap before we hear anything from the CEO? He's got a smile on his face. I just caught you out, have I?
Mr. Stewart.
Yes, thank you. It's a good point. Usually we are much more up-to-date with the reporting of that. You have caught us at a time where Mrs. Morden has been away on long service leave and hasn't been here to help me out with the reporting of my calendar and the agenda. So we're in catch-up mode at the moment. So, that's the explanation as to why.
So do I assume that you're useless without her, CEO? No more leave for Miss Morden.
Completely, don't know what to say now. Yep. Let's move on.
I'll take that as a comment. Yep. any further? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. A brief tour through the quarterly Environmental Services Management Report to add just a few things that I thought were worth mentioning in addition to Councillor Midgley's apt comments. The excellent revegetation program, weed management, and as Councillor Midgley mentioned, the various National Tree Day events. I did want to provide the opportunity to mention the Derwent Estuary Recreation Water Quality annual reports that are out and the various, I guess I just want to be transparent about the awareness that all councillors I think are feeling around water quality and the ongoing work that we do in terms of monitoring and analysis and trying our best to make sure that we've got
that we can improve water quality assessments. I just also wanted to mention that at council, you know, in this report you'll see 60 routine safety, food safety inspections completed, 46 temporary food stall permits issued. That's a really important aspect of council's role, is to make sure that our food vendors are safe and giving us great products, which you know we are very grateful to them for. Council has 95% solar self-consumption, and we generated 36 megawatts this quarter, which I think is pretty exciting. I also wanted to pay particular attention to the ongoing bushfire mitigation strategies, and I just had one brief question. So you'll see there on page 13, we talk about the fuel break widening concept at Taruna and then a bushfire management community forum. I'm just interested in the strategic planning around the bushfire risk reduction strategy that's being updated. I'm just interested to know, is that going to be a public-facing document that we disseminate widely, or is that for our internal purposes?
Ms. Chikuti.
I believe it's more widely shared. That's my understanding.
Councillor Cordova. Thank you. And just to conclude, Acting Mayor, I think it's really important the work that is being done currently, and I commend the staff for it, around coastal hazards. The Resilience Planning Project deserves a special shout out because it's going to include improved mapping and risk assessment in priority coastal areas. That's critical work, and also equally critical work is the embedding climate risks into council finances document, and I'm really looking forward to discussing that in more depth. My question is around timeframes for that. Is that something that the councillors will be receiving a workshop on, the report regarding embedding climate risks into council finances?
Ms. Chikuti.
At a point in time, yes, when that's ready, yeah.
There's
Councillor Cordova.
No
timeframe right now available for us?
Ms. Chikuti. Sorry, but if I don't do it, then the video doesn't
No,
know.
No, thank you. Not a specific one, but it would be within 12 months.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. That's all for me. Thank you.
Are there any further? Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. I just noticed that the CEO met with Will Perry. Is that the Will Perry, like of Facebook fame? I'm just wondering if it's... Just to be clear, it is the Will Perry.
Mr. Stewart.
What are the chances? Did you get any Facebook tips or...
Mr. Stewart.
It was the one and only Will Perry that I met with. And I would say that I am open to meet with candidates if they would like to come in and talk further about council. And no, I didn't get any social media tips. My social media game is not at that level.
100% less bathing in puddles on the day in question. Any further comments on the appendices? No. The motion is as moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Rantoli. All those in favour, please say aye. To the contrary, no. The motion is carried unanimously. Moving on to item 15, notices of motion. There are no notices of motion. To item 16, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Can I have a mover, please, that in accordance with the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye. To the contrary, no. The motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with the Council Meetings and Councillor Workshops Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of Council adjourns at 7:58 p.m. Thank you all very much.
She met with the design.
She's not coming.
Okay. The closed session commences at 7:59 p.m. I wish to advise that... Oh, sorry. No. Sorry, sir.
Yep.